T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on The Lawrence Holmes Show.
Mike, we use the phrase small sample size a lot about a lot of things. With that said, what should we make of Clayton Kershaw and his postseason foibles?
Some of it is true. Like, he's had some stinkers, there's no doubt about it. And some of it, if you really go dig deep, is just he's been put in terrible positions. He has been asked to start on 3 days rest a lot. Like, he's always compared to Madison Bumgarner, right? They have asked so much more of him than they asked of Bumgarner. There's been a ton of games where he was left with men on base because he was extended an inning further because they didn't trust their bullpen, and then the bullpen left those runs in, certainly. So the top line numbers, I think, are a little misleading. I'm not going to hand wave all this away. He's obviously had some bad games in the playoffs, for sure, but he's still Clayton Kershaw. You know, we saw him be dominant against the Brewers. We saw him be pretty good against the Padres. I have a hard time thinking anything that happens tonight is going to change his reputation at all. If he's terrible, well, then people will continue thinking that. And if he's great, people will still point to the times he wasn't. And I guess that's just how it works.
Sitting in for the vacationing Lawrence Holmes are Dan Bernstein and Marquee Network's Cole Wright.
Make me a bicycle clown!
Indeed we are. This is the Lawrence Holmes Show, but for the next couple hours, we will be manning the microphones in his stead. I'm Dan Bernstein. That is Cole Wright, whom you can follow on Twitter at Cole Wright. 312-644-6767 is our number. Looking forward to having a conversation at 125 with comedian and Daily Show correspondent and actor Roy Wood Jr., and I guess we'll commiserate about another Cubs ouster. I made the point before that you turn on the TV, you watch these other baseball teams, they keep continuing to hit, and the Cubs somehow don't feel like they're allowed to once the playoffs start.
Absolutely, and you know, Dan, it seems to be, I don't know if I'm the old dude in the barbershop, but you know, we see all this launch angle, and that's the new revolution, but I feel like that kind of takes away something from plate appearances. If you're trying to swing up and hit home runs, and this isn't just any team specific, this is all Major League Baseball. When guys are swinging for home runs, it's almost like I was sitting there talking with Herb just a little bit ago. I said, it's almost like spending a whole bunch of money this week because your game plan is winning the lottery next week. When you sit there and you wait on a home run, it doesn't seem like the best when it comes to thought processes. You know, you want to lay down, like, and Herb said he's anti-bunt. I don't know about you, but I'm pro-bunt.
I'm virulently anti-bunt.
What?
If you, it's an out. You're giving an out away.
In the postseason, putting a man on third base with one out, I mean, the pitcher's mindset, if it's that changes if it's the completely.
Bottom, if it's the bottom of the 11th and you're at the bottom of your roster, yes. But it has to be a very, very, very tight set of circumstances for me to justify giving away an out because of the math of outs and what they mean. If you don't make any outs, you score an infinite number of runs. I mean,
But you're going to ultimately always make outs. And if it can advance a runner and put your team in a better position to push a run across, I mean, wild pitch, ball lifted to right field.
I love
that
wild
guy from
pitchers
third scoring.
But I will take the ball over the fence. I just the key to me, it's one thing to, I guess it's the semantics of waiting for a home run or hitting the home run. You know, it's that's the best thing you can do. It's one of the best things an individual can do in sports. As far as value to a team in a game,
one of the hardest things to do in all sports
is hit
too.
A ball over the fence. If you know there are certain guys who are capable of doing it, and everybody in your lineup can do it, if you actually look at who wins the World Series, it's the teams that hit the most home runs. And if you hit a 3-run homer in a game, mm-hmm. you have like a 75% correlation with victory. You know, that is the best thing you can do. I need to have guys on my team who don't stop doing it when the playoffs start. Because there's a lot of guys, if you look at their percentage of, you know, home runs per plate appearance, yep. I just need you to be you when it matters. And I think what's happening this year, too, is these teams are getting opportunities against something other than top two starters and top three high-leverage relievers because there's no travel days. There's no time between games, so it's full rosters against full rosters and maybe affording some more of those opportunities.
You know, one thing that you said that jumped off the page to me is you said a three-run home run. Those other guys have to get on base, yep. And getting on base, that's paramount. Now, whether it's via the bunt, whether it's hit by pitch, whether it's just a good old-fashioned base hit, I mean, when you see the shift, when that's implemented, like, and you see an entire side of the field loaded up and nobody lays down a bunt, that's a free hit. It's almost a free hit for your batting average. Not just that, it's going to help your team. It's going to help your average.
FanGraphs wrote that up. Actually, there's a really good statistical analysis.
That word's the worst, isn't it?
The idea.
I try to stay away from it at all costs.
Of the idea of going against the shift in some way and how hard it is to do, even if everybody's over on the other side of the field, the idea of taking a base and being able to bunt it where you want is easier said than done and still a high chance of it. The best thing you can do against the shift is what? Hit a home run, because then they can't defend it. And it doesn't count.
That's a crazy thought. I mean, I know that's all thought process right now.
That's what Ted Williams used to do. I mean, they shifted for Ted Williams regularly.
True. Ted Williams is a special hitter, though.
Yep. And he also knew he was not his. He even talked about it. So when they brought everybody over there, he said they can't do anything if I'm jogging around the bases. Yep. And that, because I also think it's weird that there's a stigma. There's sort of an anti-shifting stigma. We always hear it, especially on national broadcasts, where if somebody gets a hit, like Rizzo's done it before, too, mm-hmm. where he goes to his B hack and he'll squeak it and they'll say, see, that's what you can do every time. And that with the assumption being that's why shifting is bad. And then when Jose Abreu again hits an absolute screaming one hopper right over second base and there's a guy standing right there mm-hmm. to make the play, nobody applauds the positioning of the defense. You know, it's always like, see, well, that's because people are made uncomfortable by it for some reason, where in every other sport, it's just defense. You know, in football, like, I mean, you work for the NFL Network long enough, nobody would get mad if you're playing a big umbrella zone or playing a three deep coverage or you're playing a single high safety or zero coverage, because it's just defense. You put the guys where you think you can stop the other team. In baseball, it makes everybody mad.
Yeah. Well, Ted Williams, like you said, I think he was just good enough to hit through the shift. I mean, obviously the last guy to hit 400. And I just don't see enough players right now being solid enough as Ted Williams to say, hey, you know what? I'm just going to hit a bomb over this shift as opposed to just lay down, whether it's a knock the other way or a bunt the other way. I mean, I don't know. I'm team bunt.
Okay.
In JUCO, one time we got one hit and we won 3-1. So it's all about manufacturing. Winning is cool. I know bunts might not be as cool, but winning is.
Yeah, I just in general the numbers suggest ball go far, team go far. The correlation between the teams that hit home runs and the teams that win World Series, to me, it's impossible to ignore. Even though it gets frustrating, it only seems to be the Cubs who have a problem with it too. These other teams just keep doing it.
Do you think it's always been that way though? If you go back to the beginning of time, the team that's hit more home runs, except for probably in the dead ball era, the team that's hit more bombs, they've probably won. And I don't think it's because guys are, you know, adapting to launch angle. I mean, if you go back until Willie Mays or Mickey Mantle or Frank Robinson or Stan Musial, hey, if you swing up, you're going to hit the ball out of the park. If they say, hey, how about I just swing level and put some backspin on it, it's going to jump out over the fence. I mean, those guys hit home runs too. They won World Series, but they didn't swing up.
You know who the first launch angle guy was?
Who was the first launch angle guy?
Ruth. Did it on purpose and told everybody he did. And it was considered.
Swung a 4-pound bat too.
It was considered ungentlemanly. There were a lot of other hitters that said, oh, we could do that too. You know, we could have been doing that the whole time, but that's not how the game is played. It was considered unsportsmanlike to play the game in that way when you were supposed to put it in play, run the bases, and it was actually probably more entertaining baseball, as we've learned. And Ruth said, no, I'm going to pick out I'm going to swing up on the ball, I'm going to hit over the fence. And then everyone else said, well, if he's doing it, if you start looking at the numbers, they didn't correlate necessarily with a change in the baseball. They just said, oh, is this what we're supposed to be doing now? Okay. And Jimmy Fox and some of these other guys said, okay, we can do this too.
Yeah.
We're big, strong men, and we can hit it over a fence. And so it began. The larger question in my mind, Cole, is baseball isn't as entertaining or aesthetically pleasing because of velocity and because of what we understand about the value of the home run, right? We know that. We know we don't have balls in play. We don't have guys buzzing around the bases and guys stealing bases anymore. So the question is, do you play to win, which suggests hit it over the fence, get everybody throwing 100 miles an hour, or do you play to entertain your fan base? Ultimately, as long as you're competing, you have a responsibility to for league best practices to do what's necessary to win, not to entertain, right? Not to provide something that's necessarily fun to watch. It'd be really fun to watch. You lose a bunch of games.
Sure. No, and that makes a lot of sense. But, you know, it's you know, when you just when you look at just the home run generation, I feel like that's what we've entered. And you said guys throwing 100 miles an hour. It feels like every team can trot a guy out of their bullpen that throws triple digits these days. And you're not going to see that starting pitcher for as many turns in the lineup as you have once upon a time. So being able to just turn around to 100 to 103 mile an hour fastball, like you said, laying down a bunt, easier said than done. Hitting a bomb off 100 plus, that's a whole lot easier said than done. That's a whole lot harder than just laying down a bunt and putting things in play. And so when you when these guys are saying, hey, I'm just going to try to swing away, but everyone they're hitting off of is throwing, I mean, ungodly gas. That's going to be a problem.
And for, I wonder about that, too. I wonder if it gives you more velocity to work with. That if, if you can catch up to it, I wonder if you're transferring, if it means you can swing a little easier and the ball's still going to go because the pitcher's supplying more of the velocity.
I mean, that's true. I mean, if you put a good swing on a pitch that is a little bit up on the jugs gun, it's going to go a little bit further. But it's your ability to be able to pick that pitch out, pull the trigger and process all within the same. And if it's you see three different pitchers that all throw triple digits, your odds of being able to do that are going to, you know, they're going to increase or decrease exponentially.
I'm just wondering where we are 10 years from now with most players being able to hit for power and most pitchers being power pitchers. Starters are going to go once through and not a second time through. Because look what's going on with the way they're matching up playoff bullpens. And if you have that kind of staff, this goes back years. I mean, 30 years ago when the closer was in the height of its popularity, right?
Sure.
This is, here comes the guy for the last three outs. And it takes a different kind of guy to get those last three. And those were your guys where it's, 96 and 97. And somebody said, well, why don't you just have a whole team of closers and they each pitch one inning every day? And people say, well, no, you can't do that because you, and they say, well, why not? And that's kind of what's happening now with the opener and with bullpenning.
True, but just because a guy throws hard doesn't automatically make him a closer.
Right.
I mean, there's something about a mentality that goes into being a closer. I mean, you have to be that guy. You have, something about closers, they're just a little bit off, whether it's a good way, a bad way, that they welcome that pressure. Like they want to be that guy. Okay, you know what? Put the game on my shoulders. That's just fine. I'm willing to lose this, but I'm also willing to run through that brick wall to go out there and win it.
The only counterargument to that is our increased understanding of the key leverage moment in a game. We used to just say, you know, like Ned Yost would set up a bullpen. I got my seventh inning, I got my eighth inning, I got my ninth inning. The game could be decided in the fifth.
That's true.
Because you have X number of leverage moments. If you look at the win expectancy matrices and you can pinpoint exactly when those occur, and there could be two outs in the fifth. And that is the moment in the game where your best pitcher to get that out, the guy that's got, you know, however you want to phrase it, the guy who has the mentality, says, give me the ball, put the game on my shoulders. Now we know better. That's when the game is on somebody's shoulders. You can't decide it's the ninth inning. You know, you can't make those outs matter more in the ninth inning when, in fact, all of a sudden, here's their cleanup hitter with the bases loaded and two out in the bottom of the fifth. And it's the manager saying, this is the out I need because this is where the game is decided because there are four, five, six inflection points in every game when it's decided. That's when some of these gutsy managers are saying, all right, nope, thank you, give me the ball. We got a guy to get this out. And it's not the ninth, but come in, do the job we're paying you to do and get him.
I think that's why they want solid middle relief guys these days. And I feel like the middle relief guys, they haven't been what we've been used to seeing because there are so many specialty pitchers these days. And I mean, now with everyone having to see three batters every time they go out there, you know, there's no longer that lefty-lefty matchup. There's no longer those guys who can go out there and say, all I need to get is one out. Okay, cool. My job is done for the day. And we don't see that. And you know, maybe that's good. Maybe it's bad for baseball because then it makes pitchers have to think a little bit more. Okay, this is what I need to do. How do I pitch to this guy, that guy, and the next guy? Because I'm not just going to get out of this one scot-free.
See, I think where we're going, And the these playoffs tell us that because of the way guys like Kevin Cash know how to match guys up and have a plan from the moment the game starts. And you'll see guys warming up in the second inning. And I think it's going to take some time to get there because of human nature. But the way I would envision it is we're not going to have starters or relievers. You're going to be a pitcher. And you will be stretched out to for over a certain period of time, certain time of the year, however you're expected to be used. And you're going to have a lot of churn, like we're seeing this year with the secondary sites, of fresh arms coming in, of using options, of using younger and younger players when they're throwing harder and harder. You're going to see more movement of these optionable players to AA, AAA, or if we even have AA and AAA at that point, where the way things are going, that it's just a pitching staff. And whether you're called upon for three outs here or six outs here, beginning of a game, end of a game, all fluid. And it's going to take a lot of time to evolve to that. But then you're not going to have somebody say, well, I'm a starter and I go twice through the order, or I'm just a closer and I come into the ninth. When that manager gets you up and puts you in, you get people out until he comes and takes you out.
Is that just a sign of the times, or will that be the way baseball's trending?
I think it's efficient, and I also think it's cost efficient. Because
I was going to say, there's going to be no longer big contracts. But to me, it's still crazy that the highest paid players in the game are starting pitchers. You play once every fifth day, and you're getting paid more than position players that play 162 games. Like that to me, Scott Boras, bless him. Because the way he's been able to get these guys all this money, and they're not position players, and think about the aches and the pains and everything that goes into playing 162 games a year. And how many guys do we even see play 162 games a year anymore?
And
it's a rare occurrence.
If you know who some of these agents should thank too, they should thank former Chicago Tribune sports writer Jerome Holtzman, who invented the save stat, which is a terrible statistic. And it doesn't really measure how good somebody is at something, but it got a lot of closers paid a lot of money. And then they invented the hold stat. They got some eighth inning guys paid a lot of money. So if what we're understanding about
the hold, though, more convoluted than the save.
It is.
Would you agree?
I would, but I also think the save is a bad stat, and it's why we don't really use it as much anymore, because understanding the guy that got that high leverage out in the fifth can be more responsible for the guy who got three routine outs with your team up two in the ninth, because it just the leverage wasn't the same. And they, going forward, if you just have pitchers, you aren't going to have a premium on certain guys who do certain things. And with everybody throwing 100, they're all hurt. And it's all a matter of time before their arms fall off, because it's not natural to be throwing this hard. So that way, you're not committed. You don't have the dead money on a guy waiting a year and a half for him to get back from elbow surgery or shoulder surgery. And that way, you just move on to the next guy throwing 100. And you keep drafting and you keep developing, and it's going to save you a ton of money in the long run. And like you say, you can spend all your good money on your young position players.
Well, maybe all these guys throwing 100 and getting hurt is going to be a cautionary tale down the road, almost like plastic surgery. If you get too much plastic surgery, you'll be walking around looking like Mickey Rourke. No disrespect to Mickey Rourke, but
to Mickey Rourke. That's obvious disrespect.
Well, everyone knows that Mickey Rourke's had a few processes done, and we've seen him in The Wrestler, and maybe it's added to him being able to play some of those bit character roles.
He was really good in The Wrestler.
Absolutely. Yeah. And maybe that's, like I said, a cautionary tale. Do you want to be with that next guy that throws 100 and only plays for 2 years, or would you rather be that guy that throws 93, 94, 95 and has a 10, 11, 12, maybe 15-year Hall of Fame career?
I don't think velocities are going down.
I don't think they're necessarily going down, but I don't think there's going to be – if you see everyone that throws triple digits get hurt – maybe guys will say, you know what? Okay, maybe it's not always how hard you throw. Maybe it's where you throw. Like, what did Greg Maddux say? What does he try to do? Change speeds and locate. And that's really all he needed. We've seen it with Kyle Hendricks on opening day. Kyle Hendricks went out there, complete game, and how many pitches did he throw over 90? I don't think not one.
No,
not one. Average velocity, like 89.1 miles an hour. He kept guys out front, off balance. They beat it into the ground to second base, and next thing you know, it's a 1-2-3 inning and we're on and we can hit.
See, the good thing is I don't necessarily think it's mutually exclusive. I think what we're going to see are guys who throw 100 and also can do the things like that Kyle Hendricks does. I mean, that's when you, when you're talking about the best pitchers in the game, it's not just velocity. It's movement. It's upsetting timing. It's guys throwing. I mean, and it's guys you haven't heard of. Did you see the guy? What was his name yesterday on Houston? Was it Scruggs?
Yeah, Scrub.
Scrub.
Was it Dwayne Scrub?
Scrub.
Yeah.
Did you see that curveball?
Chet. I mean, he's dropping hammers. He's throwing gas.
I saw the grip on it, and when they showed it coming out of his hand, and it wasn't quite like an Edgertronic level look at it.
Yeah.
But it was good. And he's throwing the spike curve, which is it's not a true knuckle curve like a Mike Mussina, but you've got the nail of the middle finger dug
into the seam.
Right.
Absolutely.
To get a little extra. You pitched, you know. And I didn't see how with that grip he could generate that kind of spin, but good Lord, you have no chance.
It never made a whole bunch of sense. Like, why are you doing all that extra with your other finger as opposed to just putting two fingers on there and pulling down on the lampshade, essentially?
Yep, with the thumb coming back on the back.
Yeah. As I sat there and asked myself that question, you see a lot of guys in the league that do it. I'm saying, why would they do it? Well, they got to the league and you didn't, so just stop asking that question. That's what I tell myself. You know, whatever they can do that works for them, and that clearly is what works for him. I mean,
yep.
But imagine growing up with that last name, though. And,
yeah.
And trying to convince people that you're not really, I can play. I tell you, what's your name again on the back of your scrub? All right, have fun with that one.
Yeah, well, that it's usually counterintuitive, right? That somebody who is like a boy named Sue, you know, somebody that has already
tiny.
Tougher, right?
Yeah,
he's already tougher because he's already made it through that. Boy, if you can get this far with the last name of Scrub, you're probably good.
Aaron Bummer,
yeah, that's right,
for the White Sox. He's
how about Bob Walk back in the day.
He was terrible, so it was great.
No, well, it wasn't.
Nah, he wasn't. I mean, if you're in the league and people know your name, I mean, I think you're far from terrible. However,
I mean, he
in the grand scheme
the
of things.
The worst pitcher, but also Homer Bailey.
Yeah.
Yep.
I wonder if Homer Bailey could swing it when he was a kid.
Probably. He's a major league player.
Absolutely. Most guys could.
I guarantee you, with rare exception, every major league pitcher was the shortstop of every travel team he played for, the best hitter on his team growing up, probably through high school.
Yeah.
Nobody realizes that.
I had a buddy, though, my buddy, his cousin, who pitched at LSU and Central Florida, passed up a full ride to Tulane to take like a 90% ride to LSU.
Okay.
All he did since he was 8 years old was pitch. He won a state championship. His team, I think, in the state semifinals down in Florida, they beat Gio Gonzalez and those guys. And all he ever did was pitch. My buddy would be like, yeah, my cousin's kind of weird, man. He doesn't even like to hit. Like, what 9-10-year-old doesn't like to swing it? All this kid did since he was young was pitch. And what happened when he went from LSU to Central Florida after they changed coaches? They went from Smoke Laval to Paul Maneri. And then he went to Central Florida and his arm blew out. He's been pitching his whole life. Like, it's funny because when you see younger kids at pitch and all they do is pitch, you know, most of these guys, like you said, that are big-time pitchers in the league, they weren't pitchers when they were 10 years old.
Did he play another sport?
All he did was play baseball. No, it's all he played.
God, cross-sport is so important. And, you know, you talk to orthopedists about it, and I was talking to a guy who treats a lot of kids' baseball injuries in Chicago.
Yeah.
And you know what he laments? He says, kids don't climb trees anymore.
That's true.
He said, that's what they got to do. He said, go climb a tree.
Go stuff up your knee.
Get your core strength. And just build your core strength. Climb a tree, run around, you know, play soccer, do something, because all the repetitive use injuries and these kinetic chain injuries that they're getting, it's a shame. I wish. And part of it, too, is the coaches who are proprietary and keep their under control. I don't want him playing hockey. I don't want him playing basketball. He's got to come to this practice and that practice.
Yeah.
It makes it really hard on trust me, I know it can make it hard as a parent, believe me. We're terribly late for a break. We're incredibly undisciplined, and I apologize to no one. The segment is brought to you by Toro Snowblowers. For grizzly winters, you need a Toro Power Max snowblower. It's a beast on snow. Act now. Get up to $100 off on select Toro Power Max snowblowers. See your Toro retailer now. Win winter with a Toro. When we come back, let's want to talk a little bit about the future of the White Sox, about where they're going, what they're doing, and this sort of cockamamie manager search that got all sideways in a hurry.
Let's do it.
All right, we'll do that now. He's Cole Wright. I'm Dan Bernstein. This is the Lawrence Holmes Show on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get
customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
I mean, very legitimate. I mean, right now he's their number one candidate. The White Sox sought permission from the Los Angeles Angels to speak to him. The Angels said they have granted permission, and they're talking now. I mean, he's in the Hall of Fame for a reason.
Yeah, he's in the Hall of Fame for what he did 100 years ago. Bob Nightingale. He's right that they're interviewing him. He's not right that it's the number one candidate. That part about that report isn't true. If you want to say sequentially, he is the first official candidate, you can say that. But looking at the White Sox opening and understanding the potential availability once the World Series ends, and the fact the eligibility then of A.J. Hinch and Alex Cora would be probably the first two guys on a lot of our lists. Ugh. But we were just talking about what could happen right now to allow another candidate to become available who I think would be very attractive.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there could be potentially not just one, but two candidates that are tonight facing elimination on the Los Angeles Dodgers. And the first candidate I would say would be the first base coach. That's George Lombard. George Lombard, you know, he's been in the league for a long time. I mean, he's great with players. You know, the interaction that he has with those guys, I mean, they love him over there. So that's the first candidate. But the second, and you and I talked about this during break, it could be Dave Roberts. If the Dodgers don't get it done tonight, and if they, like I said, they're facing elimination.
You really think that after all, that this would be the final straw, this would be enough already? I guess the question is, do they really think that Dave Roberts, is the limiting factor?
I don't necessarily think that they think that he is, but I think that someone is going to have to be, you know, the scapegoat. Someone's going to have to be the answer why this team has won 8 straight NL West championships, but they have not won a World Series. Now, I know that there's the Houston Astros and the Boston Red Sox, and it's funny because you mentioned Alex Cora and A.J. Hinch, and, you know, I mean, I don't know about you, but those World Series championships, those are tainted. I'm sorry, whether or not anyone wants to believe that or not, and everyone says that, okay, Alex Cora went to Boston, and then he didn't take any of the practices that he brought from Houston, when we already know that Houston was granted immunity for giving up their side of the story, so there was some cheating going on. You don't just leave one team where you win a World Series and cheat and then go to another team and win a World Series and not implement some of those practices. So, you know, no, like I said, maybe that's what I always like to do. You always say no disrespect when you say something that's borderline disrespectful, but A.J. Hinch, Alex Cora, those guys are cheaters in my eyes.
They are, and I'd hire A.J. Hinch tomorrow.
Really?
I think he's a great manager.
Really? As cavalier and nonchalant as he was about, no, we weren't out there cheating and blah, 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 and then they get pop cheating? It's like Rick James on Chappelle's Show. No, I don't remember grinding my feet in his couch. Of course, I remember grinding my feet in his
Rick
couch.
Rick James!
Exactly.
No, I would. I think he's a great manager. I do. I also know that around the edges.
Integrity, though. You have to, I mean, a man is only as good as his word. And he sat there. I know. And you know what? There's been ways that baseball players have cheated since the beginning of time, but not through the uses of technology.
I don't think he'd do it again. If you told me,
really,
if you told me he'd come here and he would be cheating again, and then the fans would have to deal with that cognitive dissonance of rooting for cheaters, I think it's a different thing. I think they did it. They got popped. There was a culture there that invited some of that. There was stuff from the head down with Jeff Luhnow. We also know that at one point, Hinch did try to do away with it. He smashed the monitors. He didn't go far enough. He didn't do everything in his power to stop it, but he wasn't the guy running the computers. He wasn't the guy using the machine learning on the sequencing. And I do think he knew what was going on. I do. And I don't think he did enough to stop it. But I do think there were others there that were much more nefarious that we know in that front office.
It's almost like your buddy's robbing banks and he's coming by and dropping money off to you. And you're going out there and you're spending it. And you got new coats. You got new shoes. You got
maybe
new hats. You got everything. And so, well, you know what? Guys, we're not going to do this anymore. But when they drop that money off again, you're still going to go out there and you're going to spend it. That's my take on what went on. He smashed the TVs, but he didn't cut the connection.
I think
the TV's busted, but guess what you can do? Tomorrow, there's a broken TV. You know, personnel or stadium ops can come in and they can install a brand new one for the very next day. And that's what happened.
And what you're saying is true. I also think it can be true that he's a great manager.
Potentially.
And the ideal manager for this team. And gives him we've been waiting so long to get into the modern way of thinking about rosters and bullpens, and Rick Hahn is so ready for it. And he told you carefully, but he told you, he gave you all these clues as to what he wanted, and it sounded like that's who he was describing when he was talking about someone who is not insular and not part of our organization, and that he's somebody who had recent championship experience, ideally someone who had managed before. That's not a long list that he's putting together there.
But I mean, when you say, okay, he's a great manager, and I think that when your players have an inside edge and they help you win ball games, mm-hmm. and by you winning ball games, you get to the World Series and then win a World Series, that's going to make you look like that much better of a manager. If those same players don't have all that same information provided to them, then maybe you don't look as good of a skipper as what you really appear to be.
You can never know where one ends and the other begins.
That's true.
This is Bill on Capitol Hill calling the score. Hello, Bill.
Hello, Led. Dan, I'm surprised you're not standing on your tongue already.
It's what, 8 air shifts in 5 days isn't enough?
Yeah, but who's counting, right? Like, it's like a Jerry Lewis telethon, right? I'm expecting you to come out with your bow tie loosened and a cocktail. Hey, lady!
Don't give me any ideas. I got the spraying seltzer bottle, too.
I appreciate the conversation you guys are having, not just about the White Sox, but the baseball in general. I think a couple different things. The argument you're having over Colby, I've accepted that bunts are no longer logical, right? But like, I miss the dynamism and the kinesis of baseball, like mm-hmm. the sort of like the hitting into the gaps. The difficulty with all these conversations, though, is it presupposes that the owners actually give a damn about the game that they own, and it's just not true, frankly, that we have like the Jerry Reinsdorf is. In many ways, he was ahead of his time, but he's also now behind his time. He's one of the last owners that actually cares about baseball. And that, of course, brings up its own problems, right? Because like the if you look at the White Sox from my worm's eye view, right, 800 miles away, this is the marketing opportunities for this team. It could well be a national team if they get a little luck and if you play it the right way. But, you know, even at the end, Reinsdorf can't get out of the way of his own Oedipal crisis, and you know, and we've got to go through all this Sturmandrung, and the you know, Cole, to your point about AJ Hinch, I'm inclined to agree with you that I'm nervous about that hire, because the cheating scandal in Houston felt existential to me, but he could assuage us by not only apologizing openly and admitting, but also give us you know something falsifiable. Here's what I want you to see so that you know I'm being real with you. And if you don't see this, you know, follow up on that, like real accountability in place. Because I think among the new, you know, among the, you know, that evolution that you're talking about, Dan, in baseball, in the way the game is played, in the way it's managed, managers are now, you know, they're not hired for their tactics. They're hired for setting the culture.
Yep.
And you have in Yasmani Grandal, you have a starting catcher who's already done a rip for performance-enhancing drugs, and when he was asked on your very airwaves about the Houston cheating scandal, he said, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. So it's even more important, it seems to me, for whomever the next manager is, to set a culture of compliance, that no, like, that's not how we do it, and to be open with the fans about this, and frankly, to get the fans involved in some way. And I realize I'm spraying to all fields.
No, you
work 8 shifts, so it's different than I don't even know what I'm talking about.
No, I do. Bill, thank you, and good health to you, man. Appreciate the call. That is that's a conflicted Sox fan is what that is.
Yeah.
And I think he speaks for a lot of informed White Sox fans who have to be in that place. And we talked about it when they got Grandal. There's no free lunch in here because you're always going to be rooting for something that doesn't feel quite right. It just can it be as something flashing as loudly as a manager who was suspended for a year?
Yeah, well, you know, when you think about just the cheating aspect in general, you know, we go back and you know, I'm 42 years old. When I was coming up, that's what were guys doing? They were taking steroids. I mean, that was a personal choice.
You probably saw in college.
I've never seen anyone actually physically shoot steroids up, but I mean, you would see guys maybe on other teams, and you're like, if that guy's 100% natural. Then bless his parents, because I tell you what, you run across a guy or two that goes from, you know, one year throwing 91 and then boom, he's throwing 96, 97. But that's a personal decision. And when you knew guys made that personal decision, when you knew that they weren't taking androstenedione or creatine because mm-hmm. other guys that you knew were taking it and I was taking it myself, when it comes to Andro or creatine stuff, you can go to GNC and get, or, you know, you take amino acid pills and everything that works in correlation, but it's not like the same steroids that some of these other guys were taking.
No.
And that was a personal choice. And you said to yourself, hey, could you go, like for myself, I topped out at 94 miles an hour. If I said to myself, hey, if I take steroids, can I throw 97, 98? Yes. There's a potential that that could happen. There's also a potential that something crazy could happen and I can end up locked up. And you have to weigh those options. And that for me, that was in and of itself, that was enough to say, you know what, I'm just going to try to get it the good old fashioned natural way, just through hard work. And it didn't work out.
Or like a lot of guys, they learned that their labrum was only supposed to throw 94 miles an hour. When they built up all the muscles around it and they got to 96, 97, things started to tear.
That's the thing. And the muscles will build up, but your ligaments will not. Your ligaments don't grow. The ligaments stay the exact same size. So if you have, you know, a ligament that's only, you know, a 5 designed to hold a 5 muscle, mm-hmm. and your muscle gets up to a 7, then yep. there's going to be a problem. There's going to yep. be not as much give and take.
This segment's brought to you by Edible Arrangements. At Edible Arrangements, their fall flavors and bake shop are perfect for sweetest day and boss's day. Now, for a limited time, call your local Chicago area store and receive $10 off any order $50 or more. Call today. Use the code 4U. And to cap that, I think, you know, thinking about the possibility that Dave Roberts could be available, and I wonder if you know, Rick Hahn is sitting around thinking about it, that all of a sudden that they could have a pretty different menu of possibilities out there. I hadn't really thought that it was that this was going to be the one, that if in fact they fall, he goes.
And I'm no soothsayer, but I just think that if they lose again, because I mean, if you saw social media last night, I mean, I looked at my phone, I was, you know, out to eat with my wife and daughter and my parents. I didn't catch the meat and potatoes of that game when Clayton Kershaw started giving up the runs, but I had text message after text message, people saying, oh, here we go again. Like, look, it's Kershaw again. And I know that they're not going to get rid of Clayton Kershaw necessarily,
nope.
but someone is going to have to go. And that's what we saw with Don Mattingly. They were winning division titles then. Last time I looked, Dave Roberts hasn't been there for 8 seasons. So someone had to go in the midst of still winning division championships.
He's Cole Wright of Marquee Network. We're going to call upon some of your NFL network experience as well as we get into some Bears conversation, a big game this weekend. I'm Dan Bernstein. This is the Lawrence Holmes Show, of course, because that's how it works on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Well, I get up in the morning every day, do my coffee. I got to do my wife's coffee. Do my coffee, watching Telemundo to see how the COVID is. Then I was taking number 2.
Oh. Which is okay.
Well, you have to drink the coffee.
Relax.
Number 2 kicked in and I look, Jerry's called me. And like, wow, that's weird because I have a new number. Called me and he told me about the situation with the White Sox with Rick. And my first thing come out of my mouth, like, you know, is the man sick?
Is he okay?
Yeah, I think it's okay. No, we decided mutual people. I think I was concentrating more on like a shock. When he talked to me about it, you know, we got to do this in a few minutes or a few hours. They got to come up in the media. And I say, okay, just get ready and talk to the media.
The irrepressible Ozzie Guillen giving us all the information as to where he was when Jerry Reinsdorf called to let him know that he wouldn't be part of the White Sox managerial search. And I have to say, selfishly, I like Ozzie right where he is, and that is doing some kick-ass White Sox postgame. He's so relaxed, and he doesn't really care what people think about what he says, and the dynamic he has going with Frank is so good.
Absolutely. And those two are the two of the best in all the business. I mean, Ozzie Guillen and Frank Thomas, you know, had the opportunity to work with Frank when I worked at Fox, you know, and he and Ozzie Guillen and myself, we crossed paths at the very end when I was at ESPN, but never actually got to do any shows with him. But I mean, you have to love his candor. Like you said, you like him on those post game shows. I'm sure he likes being able to have a cup of Joe and do whatever he wants to do in the grand palace of that master bedroom. But, you know, when it comes to Ozzie Guillen being able to relate to a lot of guys on this team, and that's one thing, you know, with my baseball friends and I, we've had conversations like, say, Ozzie Guillen wouldn't be a bad fit with this team again. It wouldn't be the first time we see a skipper that's a retread on a team. And if you just look at the dynamic, the makeup of the Sox on the South Side right now, I think Ozzie Guillen would be a firecracker. He'd be that guy who could maybe lead this team to victory. And who knows? I mean, you know, it stinks what happened to Rick Renteria. We saw the same thing happen to him on the North Side with Joe Maddon. Then Joe Maddon goes on and wins a World Series. And, you know, with the way this talent is set up on the South Side, I mean, these guys can swing it. And there's no doubt about it. And like you said, Dan, like, you love the home runs. And what do? They hit home runs.
They
but they also have a table setter in Tim Anderson. With Tim Anderson in that postseason series, 9 hits I mean, are you kidding me with that guy? I mean, he'll hit it over the fence, but what he'll also do is he'll hit it where it's pitched. He'll go with it, and he'll put the ball in play, and he's a beast on the base paths. And I think most teams, I think, you know, there's 30 of them. I think 29 other teams would take them as their leadoff stick.
Listening to Ozzie and hearing his grandson or granddaughter, the infant in the back, on the La Vida podcast that he does with Ozzie Jr. just makes me feel so old because, you know, as a White Sox fan and loving that 83 team, I just remember what happened when they traded Lamar Hoyt, and I didn't understand it, and I didn't like what that's the Cy Young winner. That's Lamar Hoyt. What are you doing? What did we get, right? And they got Tim Lawlor, and they got Luis Salazar, and they got this kid that no one had ever seen named Ozzie Guillen.
Is Luis Salazar in the Mustache Hall of Fame?
Oh, he better be.
White Sox and Cubs.
And Cubs.
Fantastic. Absolutely.
And Cubs. Yeah, but that's the
Luis Salazar
full
was,
one. Yeah, he's
there official.
With, he's there with Bill Buckner and Eck and those guys, but
sure.
Raleigh Fingers. But yeah, and I'm just like, okay, this Guillen guy, he wasn't a major leaguer at the time. I was thinking he better be good. And he was
slender back in the day, too.
Oh, he was tiny, yeah, and fun and goofy. And, you know, 85 showed up, and he was everything everybody said he was going to be. And it's just, that doesn't seem like that long ago. And now he's got a white beard and a bunch of grandkids.
I remember Ozzie Guillen running around in the White Sox uniform with White Sox in cursive and navy blue with the red billed hat and the cursive white C. And the one thing that I always loved about OG was he wore that knee brace that kind of peeked out from underneath his high socks, and it was the same knee brace that Michael Jordan wore. It was that black knee brace with like the red underneath, and he kind of rolled it up a little bit. And I mean, when you're in seventh grade and the White Sox are on the brink of changing uniforms, and you know things are just cool. Like Ozzie Guillen was cool, Frank Thomas was cool, you know, and not to say that things weren't always cool just around baseball in general, but you know, some of the things that you saw from those guys as a baseball guy myself, you like to see that. And like you said,
there was
I feel
swag
old too.
Before modern swag.
Yeah, I feel old too.
Well, you start talking about cool on those. There was one avatar of cool, and that was Ivan Calderon.
Oh,
for me,
I remember my first baseball game was a White Sox game. You know, funny enough, because I've been to so many more Cubs games than White Sox games in my life, but my first game was a White Sox game, and I remember that Jerry Curl, Ivan Calderon, just glistening.
Yes.
And I remember seeing him playing long toss. And even as a young kid, I'm thinking how far he's throwing the ball. And it was almost effortless.
And you look at now with Eloy and Lou Bob and the open shirt and the gold chains. And all I can think is somewhere up there, Ivan is smiling down upon us.
I feel like the whole White Sox team went to the gold chain gang back in the day at the Fox Valley Mall. And they said, hey, cut us X amount of length of rope and when it comes to the gold chains and let's make it happen. Chains for everybody.
Ken on the south side is on the score. Bernstein and Cole Wright sitting in for Lawrence Holmes. What's up, Ken?
How are you today?
We're good.
Excellent.
Okay, I got two questions. You know, the baseball morality team, that's what I call them. How can they want La Russa when this was the guy that was defending Mark McGwire?
That is a perfectly fair question.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we saw Mark McGwire had that bottle of Andro in his locker as almost like a, hey, here.
Decoy.
Yeah, here it is. And when, I mean, like I said, I was playing ball. I was in college at that point, and I knew that whatever he was taking was not the same stuff that you could go to GNC and get for $35.95 a bottle. Like, Andro did not do that. It did something if you put in some work, but it didn't allow you to do that.
Yeah, I remember the creatine thing because I was covering the Bears when everybody was asking about creatine.
Yeah.
And they thought at the time that it was correlating to some soft muscle, or soft tissue injuries. Mm. And it was just sort of a working theory at the time that there were a lot of guys. And meanwhile,
like tissue injuries because you were in the restroom a whole lot and you were using a surplus of tissue, if you know what I'm saying.
No, but I get it. Yeah. Trust me.
Especially the early days of creatine. Those were really tough on the stomach.
And the other thing that was going on in the NFL was it was also a decoy. Like, you had guys who were completely rocked up because they were on all stenazolol and decadarabolin and all the heavy stuff. It's like, oh, yeah, it's got to be creatine. It was the same thing.
I like you go with a doctor's name for D-ball.
Right. Well, because I want to say Winstrol is
like the horses.
Winstrol
makes
you
lean.
I think I had a guy who worked on my house who was a bodybuilder. He was like, I listened to the show. I got to teach you a little bit about steroids because I did them for so long. Yeah. And he was explaining to me about what you do and when.
Yeah.
It's like, first you do the decadarabolin.
Get you big.
And then you go in with the Winstrol.
Stretch out.
Yeah, and that cleans it out and tightens everything. And it's a science project, basically.
It is. Yeah, it is. And like I said, when you come up during that era, like, you do your research. You want to know, is this something – that I should get into? And obviously, I said to myself, absolutely not. I mean, you could be that guy, whether it's, you know, it's a completely different situation than what Len Bias went through. But one thing happens, you do it one time, and then all of a sudden, you don't get that moment back. And that's for me, that's like, you know, if you do step across that line, you know, your heart could explode. Something crazy could happen. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all those underlying effects, and you never really know. And like you said, that there's different things that do have different effects, adverse effects for a lot of guys. So that's a scary situation.
We're going to do some football talk coming up because at the bottom of the next hour, Roy Wood Jr. of The Daily Show is going to join us. We'll talk a little bit Cubs and have some fun with him. But we've got Bears and Panthers. We've got one team at 4-1, another team at 3-2. And neither team really knows how good they are. So it's going to be an interesting test to see if somebody can prove something against the other. That's all coming your way on the Lawrence Holmes Show on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.